Masechet Avos, Perek Hey, Mishnah Beis, until Perek Hey, Mishnah Hey. The next few Mishnayos, continuing from the first Mishnah of this Perek, bring many lists of 10. Now, what exactly is the significance of the number 10? We're going to see that in terms of time, the first generations were split into 10 generations between Adam and Noach, 10 generations between Noach and Avram, and there'll be many more examples throughout the first part of this Perek. But the question is, firstly, what exactly is the Mishnah coming to tell us? And secondly, what exactly is the significance of the number 10 that all of these things are in groups of 10? So the explanation can be found in many early sources, but Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky in his Sefer Emes LeYaakov on Perikei Avos, he brings out the point by noting a fascinating phenomenon in the world. If you think about it, every single civilization from across the world throughout history has always had a concept of grouping numbers in groups of 10. We count up to 10, and then we add on another digit, and it becomes the double digits, or the triple digits, the hundreds. We would count up to 9, and then we go into sort of the next group, the next section of numbers, and begin counting 10 numbers once again, until we get to the next level. And not only that, but there is correspondence between the sections. For example, the first number in every section will always begin with a 1. You'll just add on another digit, another 0. 1, 10, 100. So there are many, many different sections, and within each section there are 10 parts to each section. But those parts within the sections correspond to each other. So effectively, each section of number, as it were, sort of each digit that you add, is really just another level, an extension of those 10 root numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 0. And the idea which the number 10 represents is a certain level of completion, that everything is included in 10. Now, the prototype for all of this is the actual creation of the world. Hashem created the world via 10 sayings. And so the number 10 represents that idea of completion, that all-inclusiveness, that whatever is under discussion, that will all be included in 10. And then when we move on to the next level, it's just going to be a deeper, extended manifestation of those root 10 ideas, 10 aspects, but there's nothing beyond 10. It will all be found in the original 10. It could just be an extension of that original 10. Be as it may, the Mishnah tells us, there were 10 generations from Adam HaRishon, the first man who was created, until Noach, in order to let us know how much Hashem was slow to anger, because all of the generations, already from the first man, the first human being to be created, all of the generations were angering Hashem, they went against Hashem. They corrupted their ways, until Hashem brought upon them the waters of the Mabul, the flood. And the flood effectively wiped out the entire world. So it's as if Hashem sort of created the world, and the end of that world, as it were, was at that stage of the flood. So there's a certain completion there that the entire history, the entire extent of this first world was for 10 generations, and then Hashem sort of started again. And Asar Doreis Minoach Vad Avram, there were 10 generations from Noach until Avram Avinu. And once again, this was Lohidia, to let us know, Kama Erech Apayim Lefonov. And when I say to let us know, that means the reason why the Torah lists all of these 10 generations is in order to tell us how much Hashem was slow to anger, Shekol Adoreis Hoimachis Nuvoin. Because all of the generations, once again, already from Noach after the flood, were angering Hashem, straying from the correct path of seeking closeness to Hashem, Ad Shebo Avram, until Avram Avinu came, and he did once again restore belief in Hashem, the Kibbel Olav Schar Kulam, and the Mishnah adds that he received all of the reward of all of those 10 generations before him. He didn't only receive reward for the fact that he himself believed in Hashem, but he also received the reward which would have been given to all of those 10 generations which preceded him. Now, this statement is quite strange. Firstly, the Mishnah is talking about 10 generations who didn't serve Hashem. So what reward is there to give to Avraham Avinu? And if indeed they are worthy of reward, so they should be the ones getting the reward, why would that reward be given to Avraham Avinu? So one explanation given by Rav Dessler, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, is that because all of the generations and the entire world around Avraham Avinu was not keeping the Torah and they were going against Hashem, all of that surrounding made it so much harder for Avraham Avinu to serve Hashem. Avraham was called Avraham Ha'ivri, the one on the other side. And Chazal say, why is that? Because the entire world was on one side and he was on the other side. Avraham Avinu went against the entire world. Not just the entire world, the entire 10 previous generations. So all of that made it so much harder for him, but because of that, it meant that he would get more reward. So we're not talking about the reward which the other generations would have got or should have got. They didn't serve Hashem, so they weren't deserving of any reward. The point is, however, all of them made it even harder for Avraham Avinu, and therefore they increased his merit and made him worthy of even more reward because it was more difficult for him as a result of them going against what he believed in. Mishnah Gimel, Asar Nisyonis Nisas Avraham Avinu, Olav HaShalom. Avraham Avinu was tested by Hashem with 10 tests, the Omad Bechulam, and he withstood all of them. He passed every single one of those tests, starting from Lech Lecha, where he was told to leave his home and family and go towards Eretz Israel, and ending with the hardest of all of the tests, to sacrifice his own son Yitzchak. And he passed all of them, L'hoidia kamo chibosei shel Avraham Avinu olav hashalom, in order to let us know how much love there was of Avraham Avinu. Now, the simple explanation over here is that we're talking about how much Avraham Avinu loved Hashem, the fact that he listened to whatever Hashem told him to do, without asking any questions at all. That shows us that all Hashem, that Avraham Avinu's emotions were just total love towards Hashem, and he only wanted to fulfill Hashem's wishes. However, there are those who explain that we're actually talking about the love which Hashem had towards Avraham Avinu. Many people are used to thinking that the tests which we have in life, the challenges, the difficult situations, are either a punishment from Hashem, or it's a sign that Hashem, chas v'shalom, perhaps loves me a bit less. But this Mishnah is saying black and white that the exact opposite is true. The reason why you have difficult situations is because Hashem loves you. The word nisoyon comes from the same word in Lashon HaKodesh as nes, a banner. The Ramban explains that the word nisoyon means to lift somebody up. The difficult challenges are often those parts of life which really raise us and cause us to grow the most. The reason why Hashem gives us these challenges is because he loves us and he wants us to be able to deal with that challenge correctly, because that's the most effective way to grow and become closer to Hashem. Now, the Tosfos Yom Tov, as well as Reb Chaim Volozhiner in his Sefer Ruach Chaim, they note a difference in the language used by the Mishnah in our Mishnah over here and in the previous Mishnah. When the previous Mishnah talked about Avraham Avinu, the Mishnah just called him Avraham. That's his name. Whereas in our Mishnah, when it's talking about the tests which Avraham Avinu withstood, the Mishnah adds that he was Avinu. He was our forefather, our ancestor. Why is that? So the Tosfos Yom Tov answers on a relatively basic level that all of the Jewish people, all of the descendants of Avraham Avinu, still receive merit, and we're still using the merit of Avraham Avinu, all of the good things that Avraham Avinu did, that still serves as a merit for us, a concept known as Zechus Avos. And because of that, that's why the Mishnah, when it's talking about the great deeds that Avraham Avinu did, it calls him Avraham Avinu, because there's an aspect of him being our father in that we use the merits of our fathers. That's the answer which the Tosfos Yom Tov gives, but Reb Chaim Volozhiner adds particular depth to this understanding with his fundamental explanation on this Mishnah. And he says that the reason why the Mishnah uses the words Avinu is as follows. Throughout history, there are certain things which pretty much every Jew, however assimilated or distant he is, has been prepared to show tremendous courage and self-sacrifice for these things. For example, giving up one's life for Kiddush Hashem. Throughout history, many Jews, unfortunately, throughout the Golos, the exile, countless Jews have been forced to either go against Hashem, to denounce their religion, or to give up their lives. And even the most distant Jews who wouldn't have necessarily kept anything. But there is something innately part of a Jew that throughout history he has been able to do that ultimate act of self-sacrifice, to give up their entire life for the sake of a Kiddush Hashem. Where on earth does that come from? Answers of Chaim Volozhiner, it comes from Avraham Avinu's ability to sacrifice his son. It comes from the fact that Avraham Avinu passed that test of being able to give up his son's life for the sake of Hashem, and as a result of that, he implanted that ability, that courage, that mysterious nefesh, the self-sacrifice for the sake of Hashem. He implanted that in all of his descendants, the entire Jewish people. Another example, the amount of self-sacrifice the people have had in order to make it to Eretz Yisrael. That desire and passion which the entire Jewish people have had for Eretz Yisrael throughout the generations. That also comes from Avraham Avinu's first test to go towards Eretz Yisrael. Because Avraham Avinu passed that test, he implanted that desire and yearning for Eretz Yisrael in all of his descendants. And this is an extremely important and fundamental principle. And in fact, the Michtav Meliyahu, Rav Dessler, in one of his first essays in the first volume of Michtav Meliyahu, he explains the entire concept of Zuchus Avos. Though we say, for example, at the beginning of Shemona Esrei, we praise Hashem that even today he remembers the merit of our forefathers, Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, and he brings redemption for us, even today, as a result of the merit of what they did, of what Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov did. How does that make sense? We didn't do those acts. So how can we receive extra merit because of what they did? And Rav Dessler explains based on this idea. Just like there's a concept of DNA, of genes, that all of one's physical characteristics are made up of the genes and the DNA of one's parents, there's such a thing as spiritual DNA. The reason why we can have the chutzpah even to ask Hashem to save us in the merit of what Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov did is because it's innately a part of us. We're turning around to Hashem and saying that because of Avraham Avinu's kindness, intrinsically we ourselves are also kind. We have an intrinsic desire to do good, to fear Hashem like Yitzchak, to learn Torah, to live a life of truth like Yaakov Avinu. Because we are their descendants, and because they are really the fathers, the leaders, the beginning of all of the Jewish people, so all the more so, they implanted in every Jew's spiritual DNA certain characteristics and attributes. And because of that, we turn around to Hashem and we say that intrinsically this is our real self. Whatever Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the way that they behaved, they implanted that in us. And so we have the potential to reach those levels. It's not just what they did, it is actually applicable to us as well. Now Rav Volba and Ali Shur takes this a step further, and he says an unbelievable, inspiring idea, which can motivate us like nothing else. He says when you're faced with a challenge of the Yetzirah is trying to get you to do a particular Avera. And it could be you've slipped up in that area again and again and again, and the Yetzirah keeps on coming back and trying to get you to trip up again. Says Rav Volba, you've got to know that every time you beat this Yetzirah, you're making it easier for your kids to beat that Yetzirah. The kids which you'll have in the future, which you haven't yet decided their spiritual DNA, that hasn't yet been determined. You have the ability to determine the spiritual DNA, the level of holiness of the neshama of your children, of course, to a certain extent. But if there's a particular Yetzirah which you keep on having to fight, know that if in these years, he's more talking about somebody who doesn't yet have children, if in those years one manages to beat that Yetzirah and to change his nature in that area, he's got to know, and this should motivate one to beat that Yetzirah, that he's effectively making it so much easier for his children in that area. And even if one has fallen countless times, he can still change himself. You can still flatten that Yetzirah so that your children will have an easier time in that area. And this all really comes from that fundamental idea of Rav Chaim Volozhiner based on this Mishnah, that there is a concept not only of physical DNA, but also of spiritual DNA. Mishnah Dalet, Asar Nisim Nasulav Sinim Mitzrayim, there were 10 miracles done for our forefathers in Egypt. And this is referring to the 10 makos, the 10 plagues that Hashem brought onto the Egyptians. And each time it was a miracle that it didn't affect the Jewish people. Va'asar alayom. And there were also 10 miracles which were performed for the Jewish people by the Yamsuf when the sea was split. The Medrash counts what exactly they were. And now the Mishnah adds, Esar makos heva kodesh baruch ala mitzrim b'mitzrayim. Hashem brought 10 plagues onto the Egyptians in Egypt itself, va'asar alayom, and an additional 10 by the sea, next to the Yamsuf. Alright, ends off the Mishnah. Asar nisonis nisu avisinis hamokim baruch ubamidbar. Our forefathers tested Hashem 10 times in their sojourn in the desert. for the 40 years in which they were there, Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Vaynasu Oisi Ze Eser Pa'amim V'lo Yishomu B'Kayli. They have tested me these 10 times, and they haven't listened to my voice. That's Hashem speaking, and these 10 tests are listed in the Torah. There's a slight argument as to what exactly is included in those 10, but it's explicit in the Torah already that there were 10. Mishneh Hey, Asar Nisim Nasu L'Avisinim V'Yis HaMikdosh. There were 10 miracles which were performed for our ancestors in the Beis HaMikdosh. There's a discussion whether this was only in the first Beis HaMikdosh. It could be that already in the second Beis HaMikdosh, these miracles no longer existed. And interestingly, this time the Mishnah lists what those 10 were. And the Tosfos Yom Tov suggests that the reason why specifically over here the Mishnah goes through what those 10 were is because there's no hint in any Pesukim as to what exactly they were. It's just a tradition which we have since the time of the Beis HaMikdosh that this is what occurred. And this is the source for those 10, and therefore the Mishnah lists what exactly they were. Number one, a woman never miscarried as a result of smelling the meat of the karbonos and having a craving for that meat. If a pregnant woman craves for eating something and she's not given it, then it can risk her life and the life of the baby inside of her. But most karbonos she wouldn't be able to eat. Nevertheless, a miracle occurred and she never miscarried as a result of smelling the carbon meat. Number two, the meat of the karbonos never went bad, even though it was left perhaps in the heat, and it was left out sometimes for longer than a whole day. Nevertheless, the meat never went bad. Thirdly, a fly was never found in the Beis HaMikdash, which was an open area near the Mizbeach, where the animals of the karbonos were processed. A lot of the processes were done over there, and usually flies are attracted to dead animals. But miraculously, there was never found a fly in that area. Fourthly, the Kohen Gadol never experienced keri leaving his body, becoming a bel keri on Yom Kippur. This is a certain type of tumah which would invalidate the Kohen Gadol from performing the services in the Beis HaMikdash, and on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol had to perform everything all day he was serving in the Beis HaMikdash. So it would be a major problem if he couldn't serve in the Beis HaMikdash. And in addition, it would also be embarrassing because everybody would know that he had become a Baal Keri, and this never happened on Yom Kippur. Number five, the rain never put out the fire on the Mizbeach. We're talking about the Mizbeach which was in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdosh, so there was no roof over it. Nevertheless, the rain never put out that fire. Number six, the wind didn't blow the pillar of smoke which went up from the Mizbeach, and the pillar of smoke went directly upwards, totally straight. The wind didn't cause it to move at all. Number seven, the Korban Omer was never found to be invalid. The Korban Omer was bought on the second day of Pesach, and all of the grain which had grown that year could only be eaten once the Korban Omer had been bought. The Korban Omer was from barley, and that barley had to be cut before Pesach, and if the Korban Omer would become invalidated, they wouldn't be able to bring a replacement, because the barley had to be cut ready from before Pesach. And that would be a very sticky situation if everybody was relying on the Korban Omer in order to be able to eat the produce of that year. So miraculously, that Korban was never invalidated. Uvishtei Alechem, the two loaves of bread bought on Shavuos, only once that Korban had been bought is one able to use the produce which had grown that year for Korbanos. And this also had to be baked before Shavuos, before Yom Tov. So if it became invalidated, they would also be stuck, because they wouldn't be able to replace it. And the bread which was placed on the Shulchan every Shabbos, once again, this had to be baked before Shabbos, and it was placed on the Shulchan on Shabbos. And if it was found to be invalidated, they wouldn't be able to replace it, and that would be a lack of honor for Hashem. Miraculously, that never occurred. Number eight, in the Beis HaMikdash, they would stand very squashed up together, especially at the time of the Shalosh Regolim, when all of the Jewish people would come to the Beis HaMikdash. Miraculously, everybody fit. It was quite squashed. However, Mishtachavim, when they bowed down, and in the Beis HaMikdash, they didn't just bow down like we do nowadays. In the Beis HaMikdash, they would bow down flat on their faces. And that would obviously take up much more room. Nevertheless, miraculously, Mishtachavim Revochim, they would all be able to bow down with enough space. Even though when they were standing up, they were all squashed up together. Number nine, a snake and a scorpion never injured anybody in Yerushalayim. And finally, nobody ever said to anyone else that I haven't got enough room to sleep, to find a place to be in Yerushalayim. And this is an absolutely huge miracle in the Shalosh Regalim, on the Pesach Yom Tov and Pesach Shavuos and Sukkos, when pretty much all of the Jewish people would come to Yerushalayim to the Beis HaMikdash. It was a huge miracle that there was enough room in Yerushalayim for everybody to stay.